You're listening to a Something Offbeat year-end special from Odyssey.
Some of the weirdest stories this year were all about space, from a mysterious comet to astronauts stuck on the space station.
If you've never seen Saturn through a telescope, I mean, this isn't the year to do it because the rings are almost edge on. But if you ever get a chance and start next year or anytime soon, take it. Go look at Saturn through a telescope. It is amazing. It's this tiny, perfect jewel.
That voice you hear is Phil Plates, who goes by the moniker of Bad Astronomer. But it's not because he's done anything bad.
No, he actually says he was debunking what he considered to be bad astronomy.
I'm Mike Rogers with producer Chris Blake. I spoke with the bad, as in bad, astronomer Phil Plate about an optical effect that takes place every 13 to 15 years. Saturn's rings appearing to disappear.
Well, there are two ways Saturn's rings are disappearing, maybe. One is that they may actually be disappearing, eroding away and dissolving. And that's something that takes a long time. We don't really know how old Saturn's rings are. They may be as young as 100 to 150 million years, which is, you know, it's a long time for humans, but the planets are 4.5 billion years old, so that's not very long. And we think that it's possible that they're getting bombarded. Well, we know they're getting bombarded by little tiny bits of rock called micrometeorites. And these things hit the rings and erode them away. And the problem is we don't really know how fast that erosion is going. There's one way to look at it, that the rings may be gone in a couple hundred million years. And there's another way that says the erosion isn't happening that quickly. They may last for a lot longer. So, you know, either way, they're going to be around for your lifetime, so you don't have to worry about it.
This is something a lot simpler, though. It has to do with the angle of the planet as far as we're looking at it.
Right. And so the second way that they can disappear is basically, I wouldn't call it an optical illusion, but it's an optical effect. Saturn's rings are incredibly wide, circling that planet. From end to end, if you were to put one end at the Earth, the other end would stretch about two-thirds of the way to the Moon. So these are huge, huge structures, but they're incredibly thin. Their thickness is only about a kilometer, about a half a mile in most places. And so from far away, even though they're very broad, if you look at them edge on, they disappear. They're literally thinner than a sheet of paper to scale. If you took a piece of paper and made it as big as Saturn's rings, the paper would be thicker. So they're very, very thin, and we're watching them from about a billion miles away.
Are we talking about the width of the rings?
Yeah, from end to end. If the rings are right, actually orbiting Saturn in a circle. If you were to look straight down on Saturn, the rings would be a circular disc, like an old style vinyl record kind of. And so you're talking about from end to end, the size of them, and the thickness would be the vertical height, and that's what's incredibly thin. And there are thousands of rings. They're broken up into like five or six main sections, depending on their characteristics. And then inside each section are thousands of rings and gaps as well, places where there are no rings. So there's a pretty complicated, sophisticated thing going on around Saturn.
Mike, I've got to pause it here. These numbers are absurd if you stop and really think about them. The rings are thinner than the edge of a piece of paper from where we stand, which we are both holding in our hands right now. How can we even see anything from a billion miles away?
It really is fascinating. This is one of the reasons why I've always loved these kinds of stories.
Now for our next story.
Astronauts Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams, they ended up spending 272 days more than they initially planned in space. They were only supposed to be there for 8 days. And there's been numerous stories about how they've been stuck in space. Chris, you and I talked about how there are too many people in space. And as they returned, they talked with Fox News's America's Newsroom about their experience. And they actually said that they didn't feel like they were stranded in space. They knew it was part of the job that this might happen. They were the first flight in this Boeing Starliner spacecraft, and there had been some issues with it, and then they noticed issues with it once they got up into space, and they just didn't feel safe, you know, going back home in the Boeing aircraft, so they had to wait to hitch a ride back in another vessel. And so some people have been criticizing our former president, Joe Biden, for not going and getting the astronauts, and then Donald Trump, our current president, made a big deal about getting them. Chris, what do you feel about being stuck in space? Do you think you could make it nearly 300 days up at the International Space Station.
I don't think I would make it 3 days.
Me neither.
And if I was these astronauts are much more understanding than I would be. I'd be like, I was supposed to be there for a week and it turned into nearly a year.
Yeah.
Not cool.
I'd be calling the manager about that. Yeah, they seem like great people. Actually, they're very calm and chill about it. I know, like, amid them being stuck in there, I wrote an article about Wilmore. His family was like going through all these milestones and graduations and family parties that he couldn't attend, but they were able to FaceTime with him. So that's pretty nice. We are having problems with our connection from Chicago to Dallas, so I can't imagine the issues between space and Earth when it comes to FaceTiming, but apparently it worked.
I mean, I guess that's a pretty good excuse to miss stuff. It's not like, oh, I have a work meeting or this trip I have to be on. You're like, I'm literally not on the planet.
Yeah, I'm in orbit. I can't come.
And our final story about strange stuff in space. The Three-Eye Atlas Comet. Dr. Avi Loeb, a Harvard scientist, joined the show earlier this year to discuss his headline-making prediction about this space object.
It's moving around 600 times faster than the fastest racing car in the world.
Wow, and according to Loeb, that could indicate that it came from the disk of old stars surrounding the Milky Way. However, comma, that might not be true if it had been launched at a high speed from wherever it originated.
So altogether, there is this fundamental question of whether it's technological or natural. And I invented the scale, is now called the Loeb scale, where 0 means it's natural, it's a comet, and 10 means maybe technological, that could be a threat to Earth. As time goes on, we'll get more data on it and figure it out. The other anomalies that I should mention is that there is a cloud of gas around it, and this plume of gas is made mostly of carbon dioxide. 95% of the mass of this cloud is CO2, and that's not what you expect from a typical comet that is water rich. This data was obtained by the Webb telescope and also the SphereX telescope that imaged this plume of CO2.
How close will it have to be before we can really get a good idea as to what exactly it is?
It's better actually to use the camera near Mars, because it comes even closer to Mars.
Tell me about the trajectory again, and I want to get back to this, the alignment with the planets in our solar system. Why is that unusual? What did you say? There was a 1 in 500 chance that it could happen naturally?
For random trajectories. In fact, if you look at the previous interstellar objects, they came at a large angle relative to the plane of the planets around the sun. This one is just amazingly aligned within 5 degrees with the planets. And moreover, it's on a retrograde trajectory, meaning that it is moving next to the sun in the opposite direction to the direction of motion of the planets. And, you know, if it was a mothership that releases mini probes, that would be ideal, because instead of these mini probes having to chase the planets as they move around the sun, they can meet the planets head on. I also asked my research team with the Galileo project that I'm leading at Harvard University, that they analyze data that we get from our three observatories to see if there's any unusual objects showing up in the Earth's atmosphere.
Amanda Forrester of WWJ News Radio in Detroit spoke with Mike Narlock, head of astronomy at the Cranbrook Institute of Science. He has a different view of this comet.
It's a chunk of something or other that has come from outside of our solar system. It's called an interstellar comet, which means its origins are not from within our solar system. And we know that because we can see the path that it's taking, and we can sort of retroactively and mathematically calculate where it came from. Where it's getting all of this undue attention is There was an astronomer, or is an astronomer, out of Harvard who, for reasons beyond understanding, suggested that some of the things that we're seeing it do have to be are not natural, that it's accelerating in a way that it shouldn't be. But all of the evidence points that everything that we're seeing can be absolutely described by regular orbital physics. But, you know, that's not the fun answer. The fun answer is, the mothership is coming back. But, you know, it's probably, I say this, ahead of time, that it's probably not a big alien spacecraft. It's just a regular old thing from the universe putting on a display for us. Chances are it's just a regular interstellar comet.
We're wrapping up a whole year of stories from the other side of the news. Stay tuned.